Tom Detmer, I always try to mess up enough so that you appreciate your pastors when they come back. All right, I have a red balloon. Who knows what is the children's message? Has your pastor not used a red balloon in a children's message before? Well, if you were the preacher, what would the message be? Any ideas? It's a nice illustration if we could make something out of it. Well, here's what I was thinking. You know what breath is? What is it? It's air. You see that? Do you know what wind is? It's air, isn't it? Yeah. What goes in a balloon?
Air.
Yeah. Okay. That's probably not long enough, is it? Can you see air?
No.
Can you see the wind? No. Spirit? Pneuma? Is air, and it's wind, and it's breath, and it's the spirit of God. Can you see God? No. I'm going to blow the balloon up. Don't worry. Now can you see the air? Yeah, you can, because it's in here, right? Yeah, well, you can't see God, but sometimes we see God because God is in people, and when people do nice things, when people are forgiving and when people are kind and generous, we say, I see that person, but I don't see God, but God is in that person. That turned out pretty well, didn't it? Is that good enough? Okay, who wants this? Oh, all right, here. You stand up here. Ready? Take a hold. That's the other thing, that sometimes you can't always predict what God is going to do with people. All right. What do we do at the end?
You just say, okay.
Go sit down. Thank you for coming up here. Very nice. The Holy Gospel according to St. John, the 21st chapter. Glory to you, Lord. This is an Easter story, of course. The two chapters at the end of John are Easter time, John 20 and 21. After he appeared to his followers in Jerusalem, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias. He showed himself in this way. Gathered there together were Simon Peter, Thomas called the Twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples. Simon Peter said, I'm going fishing. They said, we'll go with you. They went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Just after daybreak, Jesus stood on the beach, but his disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to them, children, have you no fish? They answered, no. He said, cast the net on the right side of the boat. You'll find some. So they cast it. Now, they were not able to haul it in. There were so many fish. That disciple whom Jesus loved said to Peter, it's the Lord. When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on some clothes, for he was naked, and jumped into the sea. But the other disciples came in the boat, dragging the net full of fish. For they were not far from the land, about 100 yards off. When they had gone ashore, they saw a charcoal fire there, with fish on it, and bread. Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish that you have just caught." So Simon Peter went aboard and hauled the net ashore, full of large fish, 153 of them. And though there were so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." None of the disciples dared ask him, "Who are you?" because they knew it was the Lord. Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to them, and did the same with the fish. Now this was the third time that Jesus appeared to the disciples after he was raised from the dead. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" He said, "Yes, Lord, you know I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my lambs." The second time he said to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He said, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Tend my sheep." He said to him a third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter felt hurt because he said to him a third time, "Do you love me?" And he said, "Lord, you know everything. You know I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep. Truly I tell you, when you were younger, you used to fasten your own belt and go wherever you wished. But when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will fasten a belt around you or take you where you do not wish to go." He said this to indicate the kind of death by which he would glorify God. After this, he said to him, "Follow me." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise be to Christ.
You may be seated. Well, I'm glad to see all of you here today. I think I only know one person in the room. It's Ellen Olson. My first church was down at Cambridge, Iowa, southeast of Ames, and Ellen was friends with our neighbors, one of the Bartlesons. You know that name. And I can't think of Pat's maiden name, Haugie. So any old people here know those names? And when I was young, there was an old, old man, about as old as some of you. What was his, who, Gangstead? And then, but he must have retired about the time I started, and it was Ole Winter was here for a time, right? And was Steve Dornbush? Steve and I used to meet. We were the B squad, because I, at that point I was at Trinity in Mason City. I was Laverne Hansen's errand boy, and had a good time. Do I need to preach something? Are there any questions? You probably know the gospel. I would say in those years, I had done an internship in Miami, Florida, and while I was there, because they send Iowa kids, at that time was all men, to the city for internship, and they sent the city boys to Leftover Shoe, Nebraska for their internship. So I was in Miami, and there was a Catholic retreat going on for men. It was called Curseal, and there were some Lutheran men. And I went to that Catholic retreat down there. Now, some of you old people might remember that retreat, because when I came to my first church, there were some Lutheran men here trying to get that men's retreat going for Lutherans. And we used the Riverside Bible Camp in the fall because it wasn't being used by kids. And then we used Waldorf College buildings in the summer because their classes were off for the summer. Were any of you involved in that or remember those things? Yeah. And it really was a good program. Now, like everything we do in the church, there were some shortcomings. I know that. Everything we do has shortcomings and negatives. But it had a lot of positives, too, and it was a good force. There was a fellow in my church named Norm, and he was not really part of the community or church. He was an outsider. He had only lived there about 15 years. And, you know, in these small towns, if you're not born there, you can live there for 40 years and you're still a newcomer. Well, Norm was a newcomer, but he was progressive and educated man, and he had a job in Ames, like most of the people in that little town went to Des Moines or Ames to work. And he had a good job in a big business, and he was upwardly mobile. He was self-secure, sure of himself, intelligent, very friendly and outgoing, gregarious, and he would come to church once in a while. He was a member of the church there. One time, he was sick in the hospital in Des Moines. Pastor didn't know it. I didn't know it. He was very sick, apparently, but he got over it and got home. I had no idea. About 6 months, I liked to visit with Norm once in a while. He was a generous man. He would always buy the coffee and donuts when I met with him, you know, because he had money and I didn't. And he loved to talk, and he liked to talk about politics and economy and the nature of humankind and the purpose of religion. He liked to debate those things, you know, and discuss them. Anyway, I was trying to get a group of men to come up to the Riverside Bible Camp for this men's retreat, and I asked about every man in the church. And for some unknown reason, I went and asked Norm. I didn't expect him to go because he wasn't very active in the church, and it really didn't seem like it would be something he would want to do. But I asked him, and for some unknown reason, he said yes. So we went up to the Bible camp and spent the weekend. 3 days, actually, Thursday night till Sunday night, and we listened to the talks, and we did the worship services, and we discussed the talks, and we sat up late at night talking about the nature of humankind and the purpose of religion. You know, that's what Norm liked to discuss. Well, it was a nice weekend. At the end of the weekend, other men came from the churches, and we had a closing worship service. Some of the people got up and told what they had learned at the weekend and what it meant to them and how they appreciated it. And we sang some hymns, and we went home. Next Saturday morning, 7:30, Norm was in church talking to me. And he was saying, "I don't know what happened. Sometime during that weekend, things changed for me. It's not any longer about the nature of humankind and the purpose of religion. It became obvious to me that Jesus is alive, and that changes everything." I said, "I'll bet it was that hour and a half talk I gave on the sacraments." He said, "No, it was not your hour and a half talk on the sacraments. I'll bet it was that 15-minute talk I gave at morning chapel." He said, "No, it wasn't that. I can't explain it. I don't understand it. It's while we were singing a hymn at the closing service that everything changed. And I realize Jesus is alive." It's probably enough of a sermon. If you can't figure out what it means, you're hopeless. No, you're not hopeless. But isn't it true? If Jesus is dead, this is just a Lions Club, you know, or Rotary Club, whatever you have in this town. And the kids is just a Boy Scout troop. If Jesus is alive, changes everything. He is the Lord. And our life is in His hands. And He has defeated the powers of sin, death, and the devil so that we can have life. Each of us, I shouldn't say that, most of us, I think, have had some sense that this isn't a Lions Club, this church, and the kids' Sunday school is not Boy Scouts. You know, this is a church. And most of us realize that Christ is alive. And that changes everything. We could go around the room. We won't. But we could probably go around the room, and each of us could tell some experience we've had where that became true. For Norm, who liked to discuss the nature of mankind and the purpose of religion, it was during a hymn. Who knew? How do you explain that? You can't. And you can't explain it. But that is your testimony. We read the stories about Saul having an experience on the road to Damascus. There's a whole sermon in that story. And we read the story about the disciples out fishing. And oh, it's the Lord. You know, they realized it. Each of us has some story like that where we realized or saw the light, so to speak, that Christ is alive. That's probably enough. The testimony, of course, is, you know, as Kip said, is to tell the story of how that happened for the person in the hotel room, or for you, for Saul, for John and Peter. Well, we get to sing a hymn, and this is a contemporary hymn. Brian Wren was born in 1936, and he has written several really good hymns. Some of them are in our book. Christ is alive, let Christians sing. His cross stands empty to the sky. And do we stand for that? We should. Wake up. Stand up. At least I'll know you're awake.